3. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 1 of the Idiomatic Top 3.
With Nicholas, I am the gaming correspondent for Idiomatic.
And I am Dimitri, editor-in-chief of Idiomatic and movie critic. And since this is our first episode, I should probably explain what this series is about. Now, as the title says, it's a top three. So here at Idiomatic, every fortnight, Nick and I will be discussing random topics and listing our top threes, our respective top threes, I should say.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Exactly.
So that means, folks, if you have any ideas, suggestion, please post a comment on our page and we'll list our top three favorites of whatever topic you choose.
Yeah.
And for our first episode, since you didn't write us, what the heck, like, yeah. What, no fortune tellers amongst you? Nobody traveling back in time to write us retrospectively?
Yeah.
I'm a bit disappointed.
Me too, honestly.
Yeah. You guys are not living up to your end, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
We decided to, but we would come up with our own topics, obviously.
Yeah.
And since this is a spin-off podcast of the Dreamer's Edge podcast, we'd figure, hey, let's talk about spin-off series.
Yeah.
So, Nick and I are going to list our top three spin-off series, but first, let's talk a little bit about the logistics of this episode, because it was a pain trying to figure out, narrow down exactly what is a spin-off.
Yeah. There's this, you know, ambiguity between what is a spin-off and what is a sequel to something. Like, a good example is Star Trek, The Next Generation. Well, is that a spin-off of Star Trek, or is that just a continuation of the Star Trek franchise into, you know, the future?
What do you think?
I think it's a continuation, really. It's the same universe. You're not taking just one character and making their own show. It's not like a branching off. It just follows the same timeline, just a little bit in the future. I think it's more of a continuation.
See, I have the opposite tact. I would have called it a spin-off because it's none of the main characters are continuing on with a new crew or none of that. Yes. It's just the only connection with the original series is that it takes place in the same universe. It's not even in the same corner of the universe because it's way off in the future. Like, way further off in the future.
It's the next generation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for me, that's a spin-off because it doesn't continue the story. It starts a new story that takes place in the same universe.
I know, I think it continues the story. I mean, you still have some old characters that show up in the same conflicts and everything. You still have the Klingons who are kind of borderline evil, but, you know, they kind of ally to the Federation. The Romulan are still assholes. Can I say assholes on Idiomatic?
Yeah, you can say assholes on Idiomatic.
Okay. And it still follows the main storyline. And the same thing with the other, you know, Star Trek that followed. They still kind of built on that universe, so I think of them as sequels and not as something, you know, you just branch out completely, you know, in a different direction.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and it's just a tough one. Yeah. And then for movies, it got even more complicated because it's like, is Chasing Amy a spinoff of Clerks? Because, you know, it has Silent Bob and Jay in it, but at the same time, it's sort of like, in that case, is Scream 3 a spinoff of Clerks?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Where do you go from there?
Movie is very complicated because I can't think of a good example of a movie that took like just one or two interesting characters that were not the main characters and just build their own stories.
I could only think of one.
Yeah.
This is 40, which is a spinoff of Knocked Up, where two of the side characters, the Paul Rudd character and his wife, suddenly the next movie is their movie. And so I think that's the only movie I could think of.
I can think of one too because you gave the example earlier, Jane, Silent Bob, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they were really side characters in Clerks, and then they get their own story in that movie. So I could see that being, you know, another spin-off, because you really, they were the side characters in that movie, and they become the star of the next one. So, yeah, but those are pretty rare and far in between.
Indeed. Yeah. Although X-Men Origins Wolverine is another spin-off, I think.
Yes, I could see that.
Yeah.
Although he was pretty much the main character in X-Men anyway, you know, and he was mostly an ensemble, but it was really about, you know, he was...
Yeah, it's true. He stars in every one of them except First Class.
Yeah.
Anywho, so we decided to eliminate the movies altogether. So it's all going to be spin-off series. Yeah. Why? Because we just like things simple. We weren't going to spend all day on this. That's what it comes down to, really.
Yeah.
And let's not spend all day on this either. Let's get started. What is your number three choice for best spin-off series.
Xena Warrior Princess.
Love that. Great choice.
Indeed. Xena was a bad guy in Hercules, The Legendary Journey. She had like two or three episodes, recurring character, and she became, you know, a good guy. And they gave her own show with a little sidekick called Gabrielle. And then she did good to redeem herself from all the bad she did in Hercules. And very fun, you know, good action for, you know, a TV show. It was entertaining. Bruce Campbell cameos, always great. So it was an enjoyable hour.
I agree. Much like She-Ra was to He-Man, I find Xena was superior to Hercules for the same reasons, where the stakes were higher with Xena, because, you know, she wasn't a demigod, so she wasn't invincible, so she was more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And she was a more flawed character who made mistakes, so her stories for me were always more compelling.
Yeah, that's true. Series got a little weaker towards the end when they tried to add Christianity, just because I think that Christianity is kind of boring. You know, when you have the Greek gods, it's all like a bunch of gods fighting together. Christianity is just one god that just does nothing. Kind of boring.
I sort of was on board with that storyline all the way until they concluded it. You know, when, like, she's looking for her daughter a few years in the future with the Romans. And I'm, like, all into it because, I mean, like, she's back to the underdog position because, you know, you have an entire empire, sort of like Hordak.
Yeah.
And she's stuck fighting it. And then the Greek gods are still behind, at least Ares is manipulating the things behind. And then there's this greater god, which they never called a Christian god, but it's obvious what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of hanging back in the background, moving things along. There's angels and whatnot. So I was like still into it until they reached the end. You know, she found her daughter back and, you know, managed to redeem her. And then she got rid of Ares too.
Yeah.
Once that was done, I was like, all right, what do you have next? And apparently nothing interesting is what they had next.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, after she killed like most of the Greek gods, you're like, okay, well. Now there's nothing left. There's no god manipulating, doing bad stuff to, you know, move the story along. So it was kind of the end of it. And they did end it very shortly afterwards.
Exactly. I really think they should never have redeemed her daughter until the end of the series. Because she was more compelling as a villain.
That's true. And it's a villain that she can't really kill. You're going to kill your daughter. So, yeah.
And they made her a conflicted villain, too. So that's the best type of villain to begin with.
Yeah, good point.
But great choice. I agree with you completely. And superior to the original, I find.
Yeah. So what is your number three?
My number three pick for best spinoff on television is Major Crimes. That's for those of you who don't know it, this is a recent series that spun off of The Closer with Kyra Sedgwick.
Okay.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, The Closer
yeah.
is a police procedural drama about a southern police captain brought to L.A. to handle the major crimes unit, essentially. Okay. And she's caught up in the politics of it and whatnot. And the characteristics of that character, that's the closer, not the one in Major Crimes, is that she is a liar. Like, she closes cases by lying the hell out of everyone to get confession out of people because they fully think the circumstances are different than what they are.
Oh, really? Wow.
And it's really funny.
Okay.
And the thing is, the more she moves up in the ranks in the series, because it did last 7 years, you know, the more her lies start to come back to her and haunt her.
Oh, my God.
To the point that eventually she started being caught up with an investigator from Internal Affairs, who's also a captain, and this character was also very special because she was a person who always followed the rules by the book because she truly believed in the system.
Okay.
But was perfectly adept at manipulating the rules for them to work to her advantage.
Okay.
She could always pop out the rule that would allow her to get away with what she needs to do because she knows the book by heart.
Nice.
And it was near the end of the series, it was really the conflict and the bond between these two women. Now, Kyra Sedgwick eventually left the show and they moved things around and they came up with the spinoff Major Crimes, which is about that Internal Affairs woman.
Okay.
taking over the major crimes unit and leading it the way she leads it, instead of being a liar, being a person who manipulates the rules but always sticks by them.
But the series still works without the other person to play against.
Yes, they created different dynamics, and what they did is it allows them to sort of put all the emphasis on this new police captain and explore her, why she's like that, which you never got to see in the closer because they focused more on, obviously, the main character.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good because, you know, as you've seen in every cop show, everybody hates internal affairs.
Yeah.
So imagine having to lead a bunch of elite, really, you know, high-class detectives in L.A., when you were the one breaking their balls for 7 years, you know?
Wow. Yeah, I can see that.
It's really funny. It's really fun. And I actually think it's better than The Closer because the character is actually more fascinating to a certain degree.
Okay.
Because she's a person who always remains calm. Like, the actress is so brilliant at saying things while meaning another.
Interesting.
So she'll tell her, you know, her subordinate, her detective, to do something, while clearly she wants him to do the opposite thing, and they understand that. It's this really weird dynamic. It's fun.
I'm going to have to check it out then.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's really cool. All right, let's move on to number two. Number two, pick for best spinoff series.
Angel, which is a spinoff of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
I think in season 3, Angel, who is a vampire with a soul, decides to move away from Sunnydale, and he brings a bunch of the cast from Buffy with him.
Well, mostly Cordelia.
Mostly called Cordelia, and then he meets another guy that gets killed and replaced by a guy that's similar to him.
Well, yeah, he brought a new guy who gets killed and gets replaced by a guy that was from season 3 of Buffy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know why they did that, because the new guy they brought was awesome, Doyle. He was really, you know, he fit really well, and then he's gone. Weird. But the series, I really enjoyed it. It was very good, well written. It was, you know, it still felt kind of the spirit of Buffy, maybe a little darker. But, you know, nothing much more to say than I really liked the series. It was, you know, it was really worthwhile watching.
Yeah, I find very near the end, Angel actually got better than Buffy. And I think it's because the characters were allowed to grow up. The idea when they switched to Angel is that Angel was going to be the grown-up show where they're young adults instead of being teenagers, where Buffy could continue to be teenagers in college.
Yeah.
And the thing is, after 7 years of Buffy, when you reach season 6 or 7, there's a part of you that goes like, well, grow up. You know, like, stop being so irritated all the time and mean, and just grow up. And whereas Angel, Cordelia, and the bunch, they were allowed to grow up.
Okay.
They were allowed to be young people in their 20s making really stupid mistakes, but the sort of mistakes adult makes.
Yeah.
But having said that, it is a show that's a bit uneven, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I will give you that. There are certain parts that I would not rewatch, you know. Say I would rewatch a series, I would just skip over huge chunks of it. Personally, I did not like his son.
Yeah, Connor. Yeah.
Connor, I could not stand. So I was really glad they got rid of him, but he stayed there way too long, and he was the focus of way too many shows. I don't know what it was about the son. Was it the character or the actor or what, but something just irked me about him.
Well, it's always dangerous to give your hero a son when he's not designed for it, because it reminds you that character is getting old. And the thing about hero worship, like the thing about why we watch action hero fiction, is we kind of want to be this dude. And what we don't want to be is a deadbeat dad. So whenever, you know, the adolescent character shows up and starts, you go like, Angel, you're not a responsible father and I don't like you. And I was like, it's almost like, stop thrashing on my fantasy. Like, it's sort of like he's not just insulting the hero, he's insulting the hero you want to be. He's insulting your fantasy, so you're going like, get out of there.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
me, the character that I was like, what are you doing here, is Gunn.
Yeah. they needed to appeal to the urban market, is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, but like, I don't think that was the way to do it. Because I actually do feel that the Buffyverse could use more black people, to be honest.
Yeah.
But black people who behave like people would have been a good way to go. He's black, and of course he's from the hood. Why? Because he's black. Ugh. And then he'll do the Joss Whedon thing of, like, Joss Whedon is smart enough to know that that's problematic, but too lazy to fix it. So he'll make Gunn say, like, well, you're just saying that because I'm black. Ha. And then you're like, oh, Joss Whedon's not a racist. True, I don't think Joss Whedon is a racist, but he's still too lazy to write a decent black character, so no cookie for you, you know?
Yeah. And again, certain episodes, like, it went up and down for certain episodes. We both remember the Fred's Dead episode.
Oh, yeah, the last season the last season was the most uneven for me.
Yeah.
It reached really lows, but really great heights.
I know, it was spiky. It was like, wow, this is a great episode, I can't wait till next week. And then next week, why am I watching this? It was really... but, you know, overall, enjoyable series.
Yeah, all the lows are worth it, I agree, because the highs are fantastic. Like, if you're somebody who appreciates the comedy, the episode in which Angel turns into a puppet is freaking fantastic.
Yeah.
and if you're the person, sort of person who likes big drama and whatnot, the episode where he gets everything he wanted to have with the Buffy and then is forced to restart the clock is actually a really powerful episode on that angle. It's like there's really, really powerful stuff for everybody.
Yeah.
And in between that, there's a couple of duds, but that's what happens when you actually try things with your show.
Exactly. Yeah, they took risks, and some of them worked, some of them didn't.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, good choice. Good point.
What is your number two?
My number two pick is also a show that took risks, but that's a show that got Firefly'd.
Oh.
I'm talking about the Sarah Connor Chronicles,
okay,
which aired on Fox and got cancelled after its second season, even though there was a movie coming out right after to sort of build up a little bit of enthusiasm for possibly a third season.
Really?
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, like, I've always been somebody who defends a lot of Fox's decision. I think Firefly was cancelled prematurely, but a lot of the other shows that people keep saying got Foxed.
Yeah.
And, like, look, the show wasn't making any money. Like, how much of a deep hole is Fox supposed to cough up before you go, like, maybe we should pull the plug?
Not a fan of Greg the Bunny, were you?
But even the shows I've been a fan of, like Fringe, a lot of people go, oh, Fringe, they never got a chance. Well, it's like, hey, it got like 4 seasons and a half, so.
Yeah, that's pretty successful by today's standards.
Exactly. And second, yeah, it got 4 seasons and a half on Friday when no one was watching it. But that's not Fox's fault.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, they could have put it on Tuesday. But no one was watching it. They put in the only slot where their loss was minimal.
Yeah.
Having said that, back to the Sarah Connor Chronicles. It is a spin-off of Terminator, obviously.
Yeah.
And what it is, it takes the first two movies and then continues from then on. Now, the third movie had already come out at that point, fourth one.
They just decided the third movie doesn't count.
It does count, but in a different way, and it's an interesting one. It's because they knew that starting from the point of the third movie on is not an interesting point to start off because there's the end of the world.
Yeah.
So what they did is they start from the second movie where a robot comes back to the past and goes like, okay, everybody knows you're here in this era. Like, this is too dangerous. We're going to bump you a couple of years further into the future where you'll presumably be safe.
Okay.
And so they end up in our era, like 2008 at the time.
Yeah.
And Sarah Connor and John Connor are still living their lives on the run and stuff like that. And where the third movie comes in is that, you know, Sarah Connor was supposed to die of cancer.
Yeah.
Now, cancer is not something that's caused by robots. It's something that's often genetic.
Yeah.
And it's almost predestined to a certain degree. Some people would argue, though, that's debatable.
Yeah.
And so she's always worried that she's going to get that cancer and all of that. And all of the events that the robots know happen in the third movie are concerns for Sarah in the new continuity where she could escape them, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting way to enter the third movie without actually having to deal with it, if you will. Okay,
yeah.
What's great about it, though, is that it pushed the time travel idea much further where, you know, we always wonder, is like, with the robots, they just go in the past and try to kill Sarah Connor and then John Connor, and that's all they do. But there's so much more they could do with time travel, and that's what they introduce here.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So they set up the eventual takeover. They're still waiting for the event where the nuclear holocaust happens. They're still waiting for that to happen naturally, if you will.
Yeah.
But they're already setting up their bases so that once that happens, their elimination of the humans will be much swifter.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so there's this whole conspiracy. And then as you evolve, you realize that the robots, as they've evolved over time in the future, start to gain independent thought and not all agree with Skynet. And so you have different factions. There's some Skynet faction that was like, well, we spent, you know, an untold number of years trying to eliminate the humans. We haven't succeeded. And maybe that's not the solution. Maybe we should work with the humans instead and things like that. And so there's all kinds of factions of robots as well, and you don't know who to trust. It's really a great series.
What time was it on TV? Because that seems like it would be great. I mean, was it on Fridays?
Yeah, it was on Fridays.
Oh, God.
It was on Fridays. It wasn't even at Fridays at 9, which is semi-decent. No, it was on Fridays at 8.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have a chance, really, because that sounds like a great concept. But, yeah, Fridays is the dead slot.
Yeah, no. I know, it was an amazing concept, and the actors are so good. Lena Headey plays Sarah Connor, and she plays her much much calmer than Linda Hamilton played
That's
her.
Not very hard.
Yeah, but what you get is the idea of a woman that could turn back into Linda Hamilton at any time, but still had a couple years of peace to calm down.
Yeah.
And so she sometimes starts to lose her sanity, if you will, and is very worried about that.
Okay.
And the son is also really good at playing a boy that isn't old enough yet to have authority, but has all the natural aptitudes.
I see.
So that he'll sometimes naturally boss his mom around without realizing it sometimes, which is actually really interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, it's such a great series. I invite you to get it on DVD. It's too bad it only got 2 seasons.
And they were making a movie out of that?
The fourth movie was unrelated, unfortunately. It takes place in the future, completely in the future.
Yeah.
So it doesn't contradict anything.
Okay.
But it doesn't have to deal with it. Because the fourth movie takes place in the future. Yeah. There's no time travel.
Yeah.
It's just John Connor versus robots.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of weird. If you're trying to build interest to the series, you want to maybe link it somehow and not just have, you know, hey, Terminator.
There's a missed opportunity in terms of synergy. There's a reason why the producers that held the rights to Terminator eventually lost them, and it went to someone else who's trying to make two or three movies made now. I would love for them to actually tie it through time travel or alternate realities, whatever, just slightly to the TV show. Because the TV show had the right angle on the characters.
Certainly. Yeah. And it's fun when everything is connected.
Yeah. Get some retroactive synergy there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess it's time for the number one pick.
Yeah.
Your number one pick for best spin-off series, Nick.
Well, since you did talk about, you know, movies and TV series that were kind of connected, I'm going to do movies and TV series that are completely disconnected by probably incompetence. But, you know, the spinoff was great. My spinoff I like is Highlander, the series. It's my number one.
I don't know. I wasn't fine as the series left. Woman who was a thief in the future didn't really work for me. I'm like, why is her name Raven?
Her name was not Raven.
Oh, yeah.
That's something else. We'll get to that. but yeah, that's basically a spinoff of Highlander.
Yeah.
Connor McLeod shows up in the pilot, and he introduces his good friend Duncan McLeod. Apparently, when your last name is McLeod, you become automatically an immortal. And it's basically Duncan McLeod and his adventure, and you see again a lot of flashbacks to the past and, you know, immortals he met then, and, you know, how it works in the present. And you had a lot of very interesting characters, like you mentioned in the series, the thief Amanda, who tries to do good but usually ends up messing up everything. But, you know, her heart's in the right place. She just has no clue what right is, apparently. Another character called Mythos is like the oldest immortal, 5,000 years old, and he just cunning, and he just tried to, you know, mess with everybody. It was really, really fun to watch. So that is my number one.
And it's the show that introduced the Watchers that Joss Whedon totally ripped off for Buffy.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, Watchers, I basically watch, they're aware of the game that the Immortals are playing, like Decapitate, and the last one's the winner, and they're basically keeping tabs on, you know, who's going to win and what's happening, which is an interesting concept, and even more interesting when, you know, the Immortals, you know, get wind of that, and they try to use the Watchers to their advantage to win the game. It was very fun. Unfortunately, it kind of gave birth to another spin-off called The Raven, which was not supposed to be about that character. It was supposed to be about another character. I forget who.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they couldn't make it work. So they had to, all right, well, we have the rights to The Raven. So they cast Amanda again, who is like the thief with, you know, a good heart that messes everything up. And they decided to put her in a buddy cop series for some reason.
Yeah.
It made no sense. So that kind of tarnishes the legacy of the series a little bit. But, you know, Highlander series as a whole, very fun, very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it was fun. And the lead actor is charismatic and fun. And and actually can wield a sword, which is really cool.
Yes, as opposed to Lambert.
Christopher Lambert,
who is blind as a bat. It's not his fault. He just can't see. So he has a lot of trouble wielding, you know, fighting. But Duncan, he was very good at fighting. And he also had, you know, you could see he was a warrior. He had fun fighting as well. You could see in you know, when he was fighting, he was enjoying what he was doing. So it was very, very fun to watch.
I'm convinced he's a martial artist because he is way too comfortable with that stuff not to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Christoph, and you know, the Highlander franchise knew that they had something there because they tried to integrate him in the sequel, starting from the fourth one being called Endgame.
Endgame, yeah.
And they tried to pass the mantle to him because they were like, yeah, no, he could be the face of Highlander and make it successful.
And also, Lambert was kind of getting old, a little old to pass as an immortal. That's not supposed to age.
Oh yeah, and that, and he was at that point probably very confused about the continuity for his character.
Yeah,
it's, what's going on?
After three movies and the series, like things that were contradicting the other stuff, so there is no continuity whatsoever. You just have to take it as what it is, you know, a fun series, and it's fine. Mm. And you have to forget that Highlander the Source was made. That thing does not exist.
Oh, that's the one that tried to consolidate everything by betraying everyone equally.
Yeah, exactly.
It was weird.
Yeah. That if you want a good laugh with your friends, watch it. If not, just stay away and run.
Yeah, and I do mean like with your friends. Like you won't have a good laugh alone because it's boring. Yeah. Like on top of being really bad and goofy, it's really boring.
Yeah.
So you really want to be with people having a drink if you drink, or you know,
yeah,
lots of sugar if you don't, and just really rail on the thing.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So, what is your number one?
My number one for best spin-off series, and I'm actually satisfied with that choice because a lot of times you'll see when we do those top threes, I'm always like, well, that's how I feel today. Maybe tomorrow I won't feel that way.
Yeah.
But this one, I think I'll feel the same way at least for a week.
Nice.
It's a spin-off of Batman the Animated Series, the... Bruce Timm and Paul Dini series, and the spinoff is Justice League Unlimited. It's the last spinoff it had, actually.
Okay.
Which is essentially Batman joining the Justice League and the Justice League expanding to every single hero in the DC universe.
Yeah.
And the show would showcase a different hero once in a while, or a different unit of heroes once in a while. Sort of like G.I. Joe, but with various DC characters with awesome powers and weird origins.
Are you saying G.I. Joe did not have awesome powers? Come on.
But they all shot guns. Like, yes. That's all
it is. And that's awesome. But no, I get what you're saying. It was really fun to see. Like, it was better than Justice League. Justice League, you only had the seven. So, you know, variety. Sometimes you had, like, only three of them. Sometimes other three. But this one, you really had the core, at least, you know. And then you add new people with fun powers. And you get variety every episode. That was very nice.
And it was great because there were so many of them, they didn't all get along.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I find makes Justice League, not Unlimited, but the original Justice League series boring is that all seven of them have begrudging respect for each other and work well as a team because they are awesome. So it's like, okay. But like in Unlimited, like there's a bunch that are ex-cons and they all fight and hate each other sometimes and it created drama.
Yeah. There's one thing I didn't like though when, you know, they're portrayed as the bad guy by the government. Like, I hate these storylines. I just hate when, you know, the heroes are, you know, being passed for the bad guys. I don't know what it is about these storylines. I just don't like them.
Oh, in fairness, though, I mean, the government doesn't trust them. And, you know, a responsible government should feel that way when you think about it.
Yeah.
But the people still like them. So at least it was a variation.
That's true. That is true. Because people don't like the government. So.
If you have any questions, you want to suggest topics, you want to share with us your top three spin-off series, like maybe you like Frasier, you know?
Oh, I could not stand Frasier.
All right.
But good for you if you like Frasier.
Exactly. I don't know what you like.
Yeah.
Maybe you like CSI Perseus 3. I don't know.
Yeah.
You can write us at mail@idiomatic.com or post a comment right below the episode at idiomatic.com. And next week, we'll be doing the opposite. We'll be talking about the spin-offs we don't like. It'll be our top three bad spin-off series.
Yep. See you next week.
See ya.